Hi, I'm Jen Horn.
And I'm Ayan De La Torre.
And you're listening to Mooney on This, the show where we talk about the challenges and possibilities in creating a more mindful and livable world.
This episode is brought to you by Forest Foundation Philippines, a nonprofit that supports projects that empower people to protect and grow our forests and restore our connection with the natural world. Learn more about them and how you can make your project happen via forestfoundation.ph.
At Mooney, we believe that science and policy alone are not enough to create a movement. To get people to act, we must tell stories, stories that focus on our shared human experiences. In this episode, we talk to Mabi David, the editor of Makisawsaw, a collection of essays on food and political involvement. She is also the partnerships and advocacy lead of Good Food Community. We will also talk to Padma Perez, strategist for creative collaborations of AGAM, a place to reimagine climate conversations through stories and art. Together, we will explore how writing can be used as a tool to bring people together, not only to acknowledge our fears, but also help us imagine better futures. So to kick us off, I'd love to ask Mabi to introduce herself first in a manner that I won't be able to introduce her, and then later on, Padma. So hi, Mabi.
Hi, Ayan. Hi, Jen. I'm Mabi. I am a fermentation enthusiast as well. I'm a plant-based cook, and I love growing mold in my house. Like, koji mold for me, so.
That's the first time I've heard someone introduce herself as someone who loves to grow mold. But thank you for that little tidbit about you. Thanks, Mabi. How about you, Padma?
Hi, Ayan. Hi, Jen. It's good to be here with you. How might I introduce myself? Well, I always say I'm an anthropologist by training, but a writer by heart. I'm also a nanay. I have two daughters. I'm raising two warrior women, and that's a huge part of who I am.
Definitely our roles naman are not just shaped by what we do at work, right? But also the roles we have at home and in our communities. But since we're focusing on writing and storytelling, I think I want to start this off with from the very beginning of how did you end up becoming a writer slash artist, and how has your background influenced the kind of work you're interested in now? And maybe Mabi, you can start us off.
I don't think I remember a time when I didn't consider myself a writer. Like I grew up wanting to write. I remember one of my earliest memories was being like 4 or 5 and just writing stuff on the wall, on the floor, but telling stories out loud. No, parang I wasn't writing anything coherent, but I really saw but it was an identity that was so close to me, I don't know why. And I was born into a family that supported it, that celebrated it, and encouraged it, so I wrote in when I was in grade school, and then I wrote stories and poems in high school, and then I took up creative writing in college, and it's part of who I am.
Obviously, our listeners are not able to see the expressions, but everyone got kilig from the first line. For me, it was different because it took a while for me to acknowledge that I was a writer, but just like you, I had that environment early on that kind of just celebrated that skill and that art form. How about you, Padma?
It's funny because I'm also going to go back to my childhood, and I became a writer, it started with a lie. I told my teacher, I was in grade 1, and I told my teacher that I had a notebook at home that was full of stories and poems I had written. There was no such thing, but she asked, could I see it? And so over the weekend, I filled a notebook with poems and stories. And that was it. I just didn't stop after that.
Grabe.
Shout out to the teacher na yun.
What a prolific student.
Ang yabang ko kasi.
Ikaw ba, Jen, ganun ka rin? Did you have someone in your life that influenced you?
I don't know. I don't think my story is the same as Mabby's or Padma's in that. Yeah, but I don't think I straightforwardly followed a writer path like this. I just enjoyed writing since I was young. Even today, like, I would hesitate calling myself a writer, even if it's also one of the forms that I enjoy, like, maski privately or, like, reading other people's writing. I think people who aspire to be writers also just enjoy reading a lot as well. And that's also why I like the conversations that I have with Mabby and Padma, kasi parang they have so many, like, references or, like, things that we are able to share with each other about, like, stories that inspire us or just, like, things that we come across that we read. And I'm also looking forward to, yeah, exploring that more in this conversation.
That's true. I guess often we think of a writer as, like, someone who has a published kind of work. And so parang yung weight niya is heavy, but generally it's someone who loves stories, right? Who appreciates stories not just of their own, but also of others. And so, yes, Mabby, you're raising your hand. Maybe you'd like to add to that statement?
No, I just want to say that there was a time, so I attended a lot of writing workshops, and I remember attending the Baguio workshop and seeing Padma and thinking, what a cool girl.
I love it.
Or there was, the Baguio workshops had, like a dinner, naba, that your family hosts, no?
Yeah, it was, we used to host the workshops every year in Cafe by the Ruins.
Cafe by the Ruins, yes. So, yun. Tapos I remember you and your sister speaking beforehand, and then we thought you were really cool.
Oh, thank you. But I don't even remember.
It's okay, Padma. I don't remember you seeing me at 5 years old.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But it's so nice to hear, like, all this serendipitous encounters, and now we're all talking in this podcast. But going back to our topic, I think since you kind of already established the fact that you guys both love and have been passionate about stories since you were a kid, and this has become part of your profession over the years, I'd like to ask, why do you think stories are essential when it comes to dealing with the environmental crisis? Like, why science and policy alone cannot move people to engage with our new reality? And I got this actual line from your website, Padma. So maybe you can expound on that statement.
Well, that statement also comes from a place where my colleagues have been working in climate campaigns for decades. And so they've been swimming in the data, swimming in the policy, swimming in the science for a long time. And they just felt that this wasn't enough to drive across the message of the climate crisis. And there was nothing that most people could relate to and hold on to in the science and in the policy. It's also a language thing, so it's hard to see ourselves in the language of science and in the language of policy. It's hard to see our experiences. And I still remember how conflicted I felt once when, after Typhoon Pepeng or Parma in 2009, was it? And so we did relief and rehabilitation work with the community in Tublai. And I remember scientists and engineers and also government officials coming to this community that had lost 11 households, got buried in a mudslide, and telling them, this happened to you because of climate change. And I felt so conflicted because I knew what they were saying was scientifically correct in some sense, but it didn't seem to be getting the message across of why climate change was something we were going to be living with. And it almost seemed to, they were using it to explain away the problems that were there even before the climate crisis or even before the typhoon hit to begin with. And so for me, that was my first, like, really upfront encounter with how we use language to speak about the climate crisis and the impact it has on people who are already feeling the crisis in real life and feeling it as loss and as pain. And so since then, I've really been thinking about it. How do we talk about a thing like this that for some people can be just weather, which is not correct, but for many people can be a matter of life and death. And then also growing up on folktales, right? And growing up on mythology and feeling that those stories were the ones that I could keep going back to. And I think that's true for many people as individuals and also culturally as communities, that we go back to our creation stories, our foundational stories. And so what many people are saying now, it's not just me or not just the Agam agenda, but what many people are saying is we need the creation stories for our times, for these times. We need the myths that we can follow, the myths that can guide us through the times we're in now. And that's where that comes from, that sense that where's the human in this? Where's the lived experience? And bringing that back to the table or to the circles where we speak.
Yeah, I super agree that, you know, stories resonate over time, over history, and it's been embedded in our culture. So when disaster strikes and it's a matter of life and death, then stories can really resonate in a way that, you know, science and policy cannot. Mabby, why do you think stories are essential when it comes to dealing with this environmental crisis?
I'm the type of person who really loves data. And I even like this. There was this quote from a statistician who said, "In God we trust, everybody else bring data." No, but... I rejoiced in that. Well, I did work in...
I've never heard that line.
I rejoiced in that quotation. I want to wear it. Put it on my wall. Working in sustainability, trying to gather data from the data owners about environmental impacts and all that. But suffice it to say, we are not moved by data. Data is important, no? But we have seen how, despite all the studies we're presented with, all the facts, it's not really that effective in moving people into action. Sometimes it can even drive us to despair, you know, parang when we translate data like, and tell the world we have 12 years remaining or something, parang. Or worse, sometimes it's, and we're seeing sometimes information weaponized against the vulnerable, no? Creating technology, big data products that actually end up serving corporate interests versus the people who are actually more vulnerable to climate, you know? So we need stories, no? Data is not enough. We need stories because they communicate the crisis in immediate and more human terms. They also let us tell the story of how we got here. I mean, data can show us, but yeah, we need a better understanding, eh, diba, of why we're here, why is this world so broken, no? In a way, and we can say this in a way, the stories can weave it in a way that we are in, everything's interconnected, no? And finally, I think it's stories that will help us imagine, you know, the transformation we want, what is possible, no? And how to anchor that into action. So we need stories. We need, data is there, we honor it, but we need stories built out of them.
I just want to say that I loved what you also said about, you know, the question of how did we get here? Kasi parang it's a question that I feel like I also ask about how we got into this situation. And I'm not just talking about like climate crisis. And it's just like, you know, the compounding crisis that comes with that or the intersectional issues that also come with that. Na parang, how did humans become so self-absorbed? Like, you know, we consider ourselves as like the center of the world. And parang that's this particular era. And I also appreciated how you mentioned that stories are also able to help us imagine. So parang if I'm also just thinking about some of the stories that I've appreciated, it's like, you know, a telling of history or like how things came to be or like how movement started. But also parang on the other side of the spectrum, like these more science fiction-y almost, or like imagine like what the world will be like in 2040 or 2050. You know, these sorts of stories. And hopefully not just the dystopian stories, but parang...
I was gonna say, like Avengers, you know, like when Thanos sort of snapped and the whole, I mean, half of the Earth was gone. I feel like sometimes is this a climate change kind of thing? But yeah, go on, Jen.
Parang it's interesting also to think of like what are the stories that are actually out there that do help us imagine better futures. And parang when you think about how climate change is told in, you know, current stories, whether that's like a book or films or whatever, parang yung films nga, diba, they're often this very like, oh, like it's the end of the world, or like, you know, it's
only
like
a few flood survive.
A flood over Manhattan, and then it's like destruction, or, you know, yeah. So it just makes you wonder, where are the other stories that open up, you know, brighter possible futures? Ay, okay. There you go.
So let us know, where are the stories, Padma?
Yeah, you can go ahead, Padma.
I can't remember the exact quote, but she said that dystopia is the easiest kind of world to write about, and that it's more challenging to write, to create a whole world where you have to imagine a society that works, right? And that has a history. Because when you talk about, when you create a dystopian world in writing, it's like you just destroy everything and then you can start from scratch almost. So I find that like it's like a challenge to writers. It's too easy to write about dystopia. Just like so many people are saying, it's too easy for us, or we've been put into this space where it's easier for us to imagine things getting really, really bad and horrible than it is for us to imagine things getting better.
Why is that?
We're like predisposed for despair as humans.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's... But that's also because that's the dominant story that's been told for so long. And it's really... I mean, I'm with you. Where are the hopeful stories? And they're out there. And maybe what that says to us also is that the hopeful stories and the stories of people who are already not just reimagining, but remaking the world are not being heard. So it's not that they're not there. It's that they need to be told more and louder.
Thanks, Padma. How about you, Mavi?
Yeah, I wanted to latch on what Padma said when she said, parang, where are the stories of societies that work? And kasi the past few weeks, I've been watching these Hollywood blockbusters.
As we all have been doing this past year.
I think I needed a form of catharsis. These are things we saw, they were growing up. So I wanted to see them again, and all the world destroyed. And now you notice how they're all about individual triumph.
A savior.
We need a hero figure, no? But it's too, I think it's, we're so preoccupied with what one person can do. And it shows, you know, in a lot of the sustainable actions that we are being asked to take, no? Like shelter showers, wow. Diba? Parang zero waste, diba? To save the world. Which is, parang it's essential, no? Parang it we need to be able to contribute. We need to see ourselves parang part of this, that we are, a lot of things are at stake. Pero yun nga, parang the stories out there emphasize too much the hero the individualism, no, of that hero. And there aren't a lot of stories of the collective effort, the collective care, the solidarity we're witnessing now and we're so moved by, diba? Yun.
So that's the challenge. Yeah. So get out of the archetype. Ito na. Magsimula na. Go back to the drawing board. And maybe actually this could be a space where we can tell one or two of those stories of like collective hope. So maybe if you can reflect on all of, I'm sure you have a colorful experience with the communities that you work and interact with. Maybe you can tell us a story of someone who advocates for ecosystem restoration, or like a community that moved you and inspired your work.
we're trying to set up food gardens in Payatas, no, in a small community in Payatas. And it's a partnership that we undertook with the community organization on the ground. And first, they just wanted to learn gardening, food gardening together. But as they visited each other's gardens, and these are quite like small container gardens, they got to know each other better. And it formed for a stronger unit because part of their work really is to fight for the tenural rights, the right to the city, the right to housing and economic rights of the urban poor. And I remember we asked the team on the project team, while we couldn't visit them, we wanted to get to know the community. And it was important to them to have their stories heard and ideally for them to speak of their stories and not for others to speak on their behalf.
Oh, I love it. Mm.
Speaking on other people's behalf, no, we forget, like I'm sure I do this, I forget my position of privilege. And there's a way to sanitize stories, no? Yung, that's the pitfall of stories then around this ecosystem restoration, I think. These are stories of vulnerable people. And like it or not, there are, I think, parang, well, the term is linguistic profiling. There are implicit biases against how people talk. Parang, you know, if I've actually heard some people say, if they're not so angry, maybe more people will listen to them. Parang, if you're in that condition, di ba? Parang, you'd be angry. But yeah, we parang, so it's important to really authentically represent, no, these stories in their voices.
I really like what you said about that it's not you telling their story, but it's holding space for them to tell their own story and connecting that to the broader or bigger systemic issues. Padma, anong reaction mo naman dun?
I couldn't help but listen as an anthropologist, Mabi, to to what you shared. And no, it's so true. I mean, in academe and in anthropology in particular, there was so much debate over representation and how anthropologists write about or write for or speak about and speak for. And it's really, it's fraught with tension, and it wasn't always done with care in the past, within the discipline anyway. And now we're seeing a kind of reckoning where it's almost as if we also have to, those of us who are trained to do this work, to gather data and to make that, to present that data to a certain set of people, we have a way of reworking the stories, as Mabi said, right? But it's, there's this growing awareness and this growing feeling that people need to speak for themselves. And I've heard more often now people starting their talks, like in academe, people starting their talks with the disclaimer, I'm not speaking on behalf of, holding space and stepping aside and knowing when it's not your turn to speak, or also knowing when you're in a position, because many of us speak from a privileged place, as Mabi and Ian said, is also knowing when you're in a position to be able to say, ah, this isn't for me to say, but here's somebody who can say it better. Sa Agam naman, because Agam was a book we put out in 2014, right? And it was an ambitious book. The attempt was to tell climate stories without using the jargon of climate. And what happened with the book was surprising for everybody, because people loved it and people said there wasn't enough like it at the time. Now there's a lot, right? We're just seeing this burgeoning of climate literature and all that. But it made us feel that there's really a place for poetry and really a place for storytelling in addressing the crisis that we face, because there was a hunger for it, and somehow Agam, the first book, was fed that hunger in some way. And that's what also led us to work on the forthcoming anthology, which is coming out later this year. And just a sneak preview, because we think we were talking earlier about where are the hopeful stories, and there's one there. It's speculative fiction, and when you read it, it's like it's written by Delal Arya. She's a Turkish writer, and she wrote it in Turkish and then translated it to English. And it's from a young girl's perspective. And if you read it, it's almost like she's describing a dystopia, right? But then they're living as a community in this story, and they get to play together and dance together and dream. So it may seem like they're in a dire situation, but they don't see it that way. So I think that's really interesting also, that shift of perspective where it may look terrible, but actually for the kids in the story, they're doing well. They're living a good life. And even that is a story that we can't allow to be homogenized, right? The story of what living a good life is.
After the break, we continue our conversation with Padma and Mabi about how writers can use their craft and platform to advocate for causes they believe in. More on that in a bit. This episode was brought to you by Forest Foundation Philippines, a nonprofit that supports projects that empower people to protect and grow our forest. Learn more about how Forest Foundation Philippines can help make your project happen via forestfoundation.ph. And now, back to our conversation with Padma and Mabi. So the next question is like, what advice would you give to other writers, storytellers, artists, or community builders who want to use their platforms, their talents to really advocate for causes they believe in?
I think what I have to say is more of a request than advice. And my request to writers is, if you imagined a community, could you imagine a community that includes other species as community members? And could you write about that? And when we write our stories, can we include other species and not just center around the human experience all the time? And maybe in that way, we can, as writers, we can reinforce or strengthen or build that sense of connection that seems to be either lost or just, you know, in the back of our minds but not present in our everyday lives. And maybe by writing more stories like that, we can not just change literature but change the way we see the world.
On that note, like, Padma and I also recorded a podcast episode recently for Agam, and I really enjoyed that episode. I mean, apart from the privilege of being on it, like, just the creative sort of format that you had with, you know, us listening to this prompt that you've been asking your guests now about. Sorry, could you ask the question, Padma?
What non-human species or thing has a presence in your life?
Now I'm thinking about my relationship with my cat, my plants. And if no one bothers to ask you or even suggest it, then maybe you don't, you know, come across that point. So I guess Padma's is not really an advice, it's more of like, you know, suggestion or even a challenge to really explore our ties, not just with other fellow human beings, but, you know, with a bigger community that we are part of. How about you, Mabi? What's your advice or suggestion or challenge?
My advice would be to do it. No, look for an issue that really speaks to you deeply. An issue that may even frighten you, no, but you know that so much about you is also at stake in that issue. And proceed from there. But also, let the vulnerable speak. Do not stand in the way of their son, no? Oh.
Ang daming quotable quotes.
Help people. Just help people, like the writers, the artists, We need them, no, to help us reimagine this transformation that is possible, that we need, that it's credible, di ba? Within reach, yon. So, step up to the challenge. Yeah, it's hard. It's thankless.
But it's worth it.
But it's so nourishing. Grabe, it's so soul nourishing.
It's hard work, but it's not impossible because we already see that work being done. And I think one thing we can't leave out is to create those collectives, what we really need is kindness, right? And I know it can sound cheesy and woo-woo and all, but at bottom, that's what it is. The work, for example, that Mabby's doing that I really admire is at bottom, it's kindness. You know, it's, we can call it activism, we can call it advocacy, but you don't get there without kindness in the first place. And that's one of the things that's gonna save us and that's gonna make thriving possible for more people rather than less, which is where we're at now.
And on that note, I would also like to share a project to maybe bring out our kindness and compassion for the planet. And we're doing this project in collaboration with Agam, and it's called Letters from Nature. So our goal with this project is really to invite people to pause for a moment, to reflect, you know, to appreciate and embody nature, and hopefully develop more environmental empathy in themselves and others by writing a letter from nature. So you can check out the campaign on our Instagram or through the hashtag Letters from Nature. We're also running this project in collaboration with Habilin, a youth group working on educational initiatives for sustainability. And I really love our collaboration because we're, you know, very aligned, proudly Filipino organizations with, you know, Muni from the Filipino word Muni Muni, which is to think, ponder, and reflect, with Agam, which also means a form of, you know, reflection and foreboding, and Habilin, which essentially means giving something to someone for safekeeping. And I love that, you know, they're this youth organization. So yeah, on May 15, we're also holding a reflective and creative session for Letters from Nature to allow you, our listeners, and whoever else wants to join, to connect with a community of individuals who, you know, maybe want to use their creativity to protect and restore nature. So it's going to be an interactive event with breakout rooms and a brief discussion on starting your own creative process with our guests in this podcast episode, Padma and Mabby. So again, that's on May 15, 4 to 5:30 p.m. And if you want to know more, check out our Instagram post at Mooney_PH or, yeah, maybe just click through the link on our episode description as well.
Maybe we can also ask Mabby, like, if there are any activities that they can be involved in with Good Food Community as well as Makasawsaw.
Yeah, we seem to be attracting a lot of young people who want to be part of the work of Slow Food Sari Sari. It really resonates with a lot of them. And so if you're interested in making food gardens as common as Sari Sari stores in low-income communities, please reach out to me at Good Food Community. Look for Mabby. Please also watch out for Makisawsaw 2, follow-up to the first book, but this time focusing on community gardens and highlighting different plant-based recipes from different chefs and cooks involved in food justice and solidarity work.
And so with that, thank you guys for listening. This episode was brought to you by Forest Foundation Philippines. It was produced by Mooney, hosted and written by Jen Horn and Ayan De La Torre, edited by podwiz.com.au, with music by pulsewavestudio.com and branding by Sirius Studio. See you again for another episode at Mooney on This. Bye!